So after a false start, I'm going to go ahead and start again, unless Mary stops me again. I want to play off of the idea that Dylan had. The idea we're trying to get across in the four pieces in our session is this really sharing accessibility. So that's the main idea. You can take this as focus on tone and vowel length, but really you can expand it to just do this kind of thing when you're talking about anything. So just keep that in mind as we go. I have the same acknowledgments as Dylan, and we are most appreciative of all the support we've gotten and being a part of all of this. In addition to the work I'm sharing, I want to make sure that you understand that this isn't just me. I put Dylan's name up there. I told him it was so he could take questions, but it's really so that I'm sharing the idea that this isn't just me on my own. I had to ask Dylan a lot of questions. We had to incorporate the technical piece, and so the technical to teachable wasn't simply me taking that kind of material so much it is reinterpreting. We worked with speakers, second language learners, teachers. A lot of community members gave us feedback, and I'll try and mention that as I go through. But everything in here is through conversation with people saying, what do you think? What do you need? Will this work? Is this helpful? So it was a constant feedback loop. Accessibility for learning is my primary goal in looking at things like this. A lot of times when people are trying to learn information, there's a feeling of, I can't do that. This is a little over my head. And what we want to do with the de-jargoning, as Dylan said, and what I'm going to go through, is give people an access point to this information that is part of the language so that it just becomes, oh, here's another thing I need to learn in addition to vocabulary, in addition to some of the cultural norms. This is just another piece. And by putting it in a format that helps people see what those pieces are in a way that's not overwhelming, it becomes something they can learn. So the technical information is things like the literature, the publications, the linguistic data, how everything was documented and recorded and cut down and put into PowerPoint and created into beautiful information that linguists love. Awesome, look at all that. And you show that to a second language learner and they say, I can't come to class anymore, this is just too much. So what do? We strip out what's extraneous to their ability to learn the language. And we make it into something less technical, something Dylan labeled tone art. It's just an appealing way to start thinking about what needs to be learned. So what do we need to take into consideration? These are things like, what do learners actually understand about what I'm talking about? What do they need in order to go forward and use that information? What's the relationship between receptive skills and speaking skills? I just want to be able to speak my language. Why do I need to be able to focus on this hearing? Well, it's the idea that if you hear something better, you're going to pay attention when you speak too. So setting these things out as part of the language learning in a non-threatening way is helpful to learners. So what I'd like to share for the rest of this is some ways to make this information accessible. The input that they get accessible so that they can begin to utilize information that's been documented, collected, shared more technically. Simple definitions. So a lot of times we start out with, okay, today we're going to look at these minimal pair contrasts, and here are some of the vowel length. And they're like, what vowel what? I know what a vowel is, but what's a vowel length? And setting out simple definitions like, it's the duration. It's how long a vowel is. With examples, done. But it's taking that little time to set up that information. Explanations, just telling exactly what tone is. A lot of people will come to a language class and go, oh, it's a tone language. That's that hard stuff, right? No, it's just a variation that gives you new words. We'll play with it. It'll be fun. Examples really, really help. It gives people something to anchor onto. So setting something up like this. In Cherokee, for example, the written form, whether it's in the syllabary format or in the romanized form, they look exactly the same. These are two entirely different words. And by showing something like when you speak it, that vowel length and tone information makes a difference. We use diacritics to show what those are, but otherwise you can't tell. It gives people an access point to the information. Oh, I want to pay attention to that because it makes a difference. Making things notable, noticeable. So this is the idea of creating awareness, helping people see what you're talking about. you're going blah, 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 vowel length, blah, 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 tone. It's too much. But if you just point it out and say, hey, look at these two things. Notice how the red is different from the blue. Oh, okay, that's what you're talking about. Just that kind of information pops out. So we put that into practice and we put together, you can see it as kind of a training video or something people can do on their own, but these are small sets of videos, and PowerPoints that were used for second language learners. The teacher for the class wanted something, the students for the class wanted something that they could go home and practice with. They could go home and listen to. So the teacher would give an in-class introduction to things like tone and vowel length, and then students could go home and practice this. There are probably more elegant ways, fancier software, but this was the format the teacher said all students had access to. All students could use PowerPoint. So these are very simple PowerPoints.
Toxy, toxy, gule, gule, gule.
They may be a little bit specially chosen so that short vowel, long vowel distinction really stands out. But once students see that they can hear that, they can distinguish that, there's kind of a relief. Oh, I get this. So that was a really nice one. So that was the intro one. And we just have a series of them. They're, what do I have there, 12 slides? They're just posted and students can go back to those and listen to those. So then we move on to the tone, which was, again, a little bit more challenging, starting with visuals. The visuals helped the learners see what the reference point is. It's not like it's a musical scale exactly where I can say a C sharp is this tone. It's in reference to each other. Once students saw this, then they had an entry point. Oh, I'm comparing tones. And so we combined it with audio. This was a little hard because they're trying to discern it. So by combining the visual, audio, and written forms, where I've highlighted the pieces I want the students to be listening to. I've keyed in not only highlighting for awareness, but I've got the color of the vowel, and the color of the tone in the tone art. In my dream world, when I have better technical skills, each of those lines would come in with the sounds. I don't have those skills, so it doesn't do that yet. So then we took that after that introduction, and then we had a series of examples for each. So let's just take the low falling, the blue one. Set it up visually. This is the one we're going to be focused on. So again, creating that awareness. Remind them which one we're looking at. And then all the words are that sound. So that there's different examples with different sounds, they can begin paying attention to it, and they can replay this over and over and over again until they start getting the hang of it. Typically, people pick out like a holotype example, one example that sticks in their head. Awesome. And if you refer back to that or those groups of words, they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that one. It just helps solidify their understanding.
Nasty.
So then this is the set we did for the tone. So we have a whole set of them just like that for each of the tones. After they get the hang of that, proceeding on to putting things into pairs. So the wider the contrast, the more easy it is to access the difference between them. Rising and falling are usually better, not necessarily that you can distinguish rising and falling right away, it's you can listen for a change. Change is more noticeable than no change. So it's just looking at what learners can access. Maintain the colors that they had been introduced to before, use some of the same words by pairing them up that way. I'm bringing back things that they're familiar with. So then, I've introduced them, I've given them some comparison. Now I'm going to set up opportunities for them to practice and discern them, but I'm going to set them up very carefully in terms of those wide contrasts. So is this a rising sound or a falling sound? As they start to get that, I can start working into choosing between three things. So it's the teacher's role to set those up so that they're very accessible to the student. But sometimes we become very reliant on the drawing or the colors, right? So then you change it to black and white. Ah, the colors are gone. Wait, I memorized it's red. It's the red one. It gets you moving to the next step, okay? I have to look, what's the reference point? What's the comparison? And then you take that away, and all they're listening to is the sound. But had you started there, it's too much. I don't know what you want me to listen to. I don't know what I'm listening to. So you're stepping through things for them to build up their resources. So we did that as a practice too. So if you've noticed the groups of them, there's one set intro to vowel length, one set intro to tone, and then a whole set of practices. And within the practices, the answer key is there, everything is given there. They can go back through it. It's a variety of sets of words. Some of them are the same words they've already been introduced to. Some of them are brand new words. But these are posted for the students to do on their own. Teachers can use them in class, but they're available for the students when they don't feel comfortable, when they have time to work on them on their own. It's not the pressure of the teacher in the classroom. So I've heard from a couple of the learners who were strong learners who actually went back and redid their understanding and their sense of the tone by listening to these again. So they're communicative speakers whose language has gotten a little bit of fine-tuning by going back to just recordings like this, which are simple in terms of the vocabulary and the concepts, but in terms of having something that they can go to and practice, it's just a nice little help. So what the teachers and learners need, this is the interactive part, asking. So we asked the teachers what they needed to help their students learn. We asked the students what they needed to become better at this. We asked speakers to help us with the recordings. We asked speakers to think about when they listen to second language learners, what kinds of things do you feel like could be better? And they recorded with us words that helped out with those. Roulet is one of my favorites because that vowel is so long and there's this sense of, I've got this. But that came from the speakers saying, I got a word. I've got something that can really help. And people always go to that one when you ask them about long and short vowels when they're learning them. So it was very interactive. And when I say ask, I mean ask a lot of questions. So this massive amalgam of slides, this was the first draft of all the things that we did. So what do you think of this? How's this one gonna work? Do you like the way this is set up? Will this be helpful to you at home, or is it too much information? Do you need more? And we walked through slides, we went through with actual learners, we talked with them, we asked them about the quality of the recording on their own machines at home, whether the PowerPoint downloaded okay. So by asking the learners, we're able to tease out things that are in their way and not helpful for them as well. Continuing to improve. So this is fairly basic stuff, as I said, in terms of an entry level for language, but what do you do beyond that? So that came as, okay, I'm starting to get the hang of this, what do I need to do? So increasing that awareness of vowel length as they learn new vocabulary, fitting that in just as quick reviews of, so, short or long? Why do you think that's long? What's a contrasting word? Getting them to be actively involved in furthering their understanding of these. Increasing awareness of tone. So we just worked at the word level. There's much more to it. There's much more to prosody. There's much more with suprasegmentals. But you've got to start somewhere. This is where we started. Receptive and listening skills became something more striking after this tone was introduced. Previously, people were really listening for, what is that person saying? You know, that communicative intent, which is awesome. But if you add on to that, oh, what did that sound like rhythmically? Where was that long vowel? How did that tone drop? There was more of awareness of actually what was going on with the language, which improved their speaking, improved their listening, and just added that one more little nugget that was missing before. Generally, not as much was done with tone because it was seen as overwhelming. So there's just, you know, slight improvements with every little thing. Building those foundations and just improving on what was already there. going further from that, what can learners and teachers do once we've had that? It's learning and practicing, it's providing that information, and asking, hey, do you hear? What do you hear? What? Why do you think it's that? So over fine-tuning, things that you could never start out with become more common questions, become much more easily shared. Practicing speaking. Asking a speaker, well, how do you distinguish that slight little sound? I'm trying to do this. I think my sounds sound exactly like yours, but when you hear it, does it sound that way? When we were working with speakers, I worked a lot with the children in the immersion school, so one of the words you learn is the word for cat. I'm like, oh yeah, I got this. Two syllables. And they're like, yeah, you have no tone on yours. We understand because you have that, you know, Kansas accent. I was like, oh, so what is it? And they're like, there's a rising tone in there. Oh. So to me it sounded fine, but then when I heard it right and I said it right, totally different word. Much more understandable, much clearer. I was communicative before, but afterwards I sounded better. So there's little subtle pride in being able to incorporate that piece of tone. Practicing, distinguishing similar sounds, that's often difficult for learners. How do I get that subtle rise versus that subtle fall? These kinds of questions come after a basic introduction to things like tone and vowel length. They wouldn't have asked these things before comfortably, and they felt more comfortable doing so afterwards. Imitations and mimicking software, those are all kind of basic things, but they really, really help learners after they get the hang of it. So overall, like, two conclusions are, if you transform technical information to teachable, it enhances those learning opportunities, but maybe more importantly, it's worthwhile and doable. So these are our two sessions, and we want to make sure and invite you back after lunch to Olivia and Chris's sessions. And mahalo, and any questions? So not only this, so my day job is I teach English as a second language, and I've been doing a lot of that with the visuals this semester, and I pulled from the Cherokee work and into the ESL work, and it works phenomenally, because there's something secure about seeing a visual. Oh, it goes up. Now, how you represent that may be very personal. A lot of our students were making their own diacritic marks, ways they remembered it. So you can have a standardized version, but if they have an awareness, just to line up. One of the things Dylan and I were talking about last night is in choosing an orthography that worked for the community, the orthography they were more comfortable with was the one that mimicked the sound. So if it was too abstract, yeah, the information was there, but if I can see right away, oh, that's up, that's down, helps tremendously. And those kinds of things can be scaffolded early. You have everything there. You've got bright colors. You've got lines. And then as they get the hang of it, you back it off. If you feel it slipping, you put it back in. And it's a quick reminder, and it works wonderfully. It really does help.
Yeah, the colors seem like a really
nice addition to that. Yeah, I worried a little bit about color blindness, but building in redundancy helps too. So as long as it's redundant and represented somewhere else with bold or underlining or some sort of curve, it does help. So the isolation was the starting point, and this is actually something we've been debating back and forth. Where's the better place to start? At something like this, we made the decision point to start at the isolated words because it was so overwhelming that it was not being addressed at all. And so the next step would be to expand that to words, not in isolation and building on sentences. We've been thinking about maybe framing within more used phrases and building something like this so that it's accessible with words they already know and use. I think it's being maybe considered in the community, but I'm not sure. But that would definitely be the next step. This was being introduced in the beginning levels, and so there hadn't been much material work done before, so it was introduced as a concept. This is now part of whichever class they're in. So the same teacher teaches all the classes. He's just got it as part of those. Maybe doesn't go over it as much in the upper levels, but keeps it there as a reminder. A couple of the learners we had worked with were advanced second language speakers who felt like it really helped them, but people just beginning felt that the access to this information early on helped them, as opposed to the ones who were further along, like, I gotta go back and rethink how I say some things. So it was irrespective of level. So the children in the immersion program weren't using this. They felt that at the word level, the children's tone was spot on, which was interesting. Originally, we had built this to be part of the immersion, so it's predominantly being used at the university level with the university teachers. For sure. Yeah, for sure. And I think that's how the speakers looked at it when they started to see the things fall together. Oh, I've got a better word for you. You're using that word, but here's a better word. So yeah, definitely. And it's like anything, when you come back to it, it's kind of a home reference point. Oh, yeah, I remember that. So yeah, thanks. Thank you.